Welcome back to the Doug Knoll Show with your host, lawyer to peacemaker, Doug Knoll.
We're talking with Ira Chalup, the author of the book, The Courageous Follower, Standing Up to and For Our Leaders. He is also the co-editor of the recently released book, The Art of Followership, How Great Followers Create Great Leaders and Organizations. His website is courageousfollower.net, where you can find out more about his book. And I invite you to call him with your conflicts, stories, or comments about courageous followership at 877-474-3302. That's 877-474-3302. So, Ira, we were talking about these five different behaviors, assuming responsibility, serving leadership, questioning and challenging based on care and support. Number four was participate in transformation and taking a moral stance. And it seems to me that the dark side of this is that a follower who is not careful about this can create more conflict than might be transformed. How do you avoid that?
Well, you are right. The elements of successful, courageous followership, there are really, you could say, three elements. One is building a relationship with the leader. We've talked somewhat about that. I said that if you're having a problematic relationship, I encourage people to focus on supporting the leader more, starting by just literally coming in every day and saying, how can I help you today? And then doing what you can to help them. The trust builds up. Once you have the relationship and the trust, then you have to have the courage to risk the relationship by being candid. If the leader is doing something that is clearly hurting the morale, doing something that's not serving stakeholders well, being candid in a respectful, constructive way, but authentic, not sugarcoating it, being willing to have an adult-to-adult conversation. Now, that's the second part, the courage to be candid. But the third part is that you need to be skillful. You can't just go in, guns a-blazing. You have to understand something about human defensiveness. How do you minimize the defensiveness and maximize the receptivity? And in my book, I go into a lot of the strategies and the kinds of language that people can use to maximize that positive effect rather than to create conflict.
Are these the kinds of elements, or especially the last part, the skill set, is that the sort of thing that you can practice with the languaging until you, and role play it in your head until you get it down?
Yes, very much so. And you can also take a trusted friend and say, look, I think I have to have a candid conversation with the person I'm reporting to. And first of all, would you check me out? Let me tell you how I see it and first give me honest feedback if I'm off base or not. And if it sounds like how I'm thinking about this is fair, then I want to practice with you a little bit how I would approach it so I don't come off in a way that's going to raise the leader's hackles, but instead is going to get them to see, really, this is important that they pay attention to this. It's important both for the organization and really for their own self-interest as well, because they want to be successful. And if they're doing something that's going to potentially impede their own success, they need to hear that and then decide what to do about it.
So I have a question for you. I know that one of the many roles that you play is as executive coach. Is this something that you do professionally, help people role play their way through difficult conversations with leaders?
I can certainly do that and have done it. But I want to emphasize that I think people can do it with each other. In other words, I don't want to make this seem like something that you don't already have the potential power to do yourself. That would defeat what I'm trying to do here, which is to help people understand that they already have more power and ability to influence the relationship with leaders if they will have the courage to be authentic, to have candid conversations, but be smart enough to get their thoughts in order, practice what they want to say, test it out on someone if it's truly a sensitive conversation, and then go in prepared to do the best job they can to be truthful and to recognize that the leader will have some sort of defensiveness. Don't get thrown by it, but continue to acknowledge your support for the leader, your belief in his or her leadership, and bring attention to the issue that can be tripping up the leader in the organization.
One of the things that I teach in the leadership work that I do is that it's often useful to not bring a problem to somebody unless you can also offer up solutions.
Generally speaking,
does that idea resonate here?
Yes. Generally speaking, that's a good idea, with the caveat that you don't want to insist on your solution. I think it's good to come in with a potential solution. But as long as the leader engages in thinking about the problem, they may come up with a way to do it that's more comfortable for them, perhaps more creative, better. They have data that you don't have. So you don't want to come in with a hard and fast position about what you want them to do, but you want to engage them and have constructive ideas for them.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I was wondering if you have any stories that you can share with us where you've seen this whole approach to followership being successfully implemented.
Yes. Now, you know, a lot of courageous follower stories happen quietly because...
Of course they do.
Courageous followers aren't whistleblowers. You know, they want to remedy whatever needs remedying within the relationship and within the organization. But certainly, I have a range of stories, and the it's always sort of a question about which one to choose from, if you will. Perhaps, you know, one of the ones that I didn't personally witness, but that is documented, was the story that I tell at the beginning of my book about the in the first Iraq War, where a soldier was ordered to fire at a certain point and refused to do so because he was confident, certain that it was our own forces. And he didn't fire, and he was brought before a court-martial. And in the court-martial, the officers that examined the data recognized that he was right to disobey the order in that circumstance. And instead of penalizing him, they actually rewarded him with a medal for the courage to stand up to the leader in that situation. So sometimes you have to stand up for the leader, and sometimes you have to stand up to the leader.
And how do you know when to do it, either?
Well, you know, there's where it requires a certain discernment of yourself, and that's why it's good to have sounding boards where you check yourself out, if you will. Am I off base? Is this me? Is this a kind of pattern that I tend to get into with leaders? Well, in that case, you know, I really better shine the spotlight on me. If generally I have good working relationships, and in this particular case it's going sour, okay, what's happened here? How did I contribute to it? What is the leader doing? How can I productively bring this to the leader's attention? You know, a small example would be leaders who tend to berate their staff publicly, which is a no-no. How can I, take the leader aside and say, look, when my performance warrants critical feedback, I can learn from you, but I want you to do it in private. And usually, when you stand up for yourself like that, you will be respected. The leader will make a good faith effort to behave differently in the future.
So what happens if you're dealing with the problem of leadership that's two or three levels above you?
Yeah, that becomes very interesting, because oftentimes the orders that we struggle with are not coming from the person we report to. They're coming from higher up.
I love my boss, but the guy above him is a real jerk.
Yeah, and again, I don't like characterizing it as a real jerk, because they're a complex human being who does some things right and gets some things wrong. And we have to start off from that baseline of respect. Otherwise, we can't influence upwards, because the individual who senses we don't respect them at all is going to defend themselves from us, and probably appropriately. So I would challenge you to start with a reevaluation.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
But then it's a matter of how do you get the person you report to take the matter up with the person he reports to, or let you do it, and how do you do it in a way, if you feel the need to go directly to two levels up, and the person you are directly reporting to is not comfortable with that, how do you do that without compromising or hurting your relationship with your direct supervisor? There are strategies for doing that, and again, you know, I cover some of them, but the main thing is to always be respectful. You know, you might, for example, say, look, I really feel that this needs to be taken to a higher level. If you're not comfortable doing it, I have too much respect for you to go behind your back, but I want you to know that I'm going to have that conversation. And again, most of the time, people will respect if you take a stand and you're doing it, you know, without sort of embarrassing anyone or being overly aggressive. You're being clear, you're being authentic, you're being strong in the stance you're taking.
Now, let's suppose that you're a leader. How do you encourage courageous, assuming that you have the courage to do that, how do you encourage courageous followership within your organization?
Well, that's a very good point. You see, virtually all leaders assume they have an open-door policy and that anybody can come in, and if they have a problem, tell them what's wrong.
Right.
And in reality, that's not true. You know, many people will not go in and have a direct conversation with the leader about what's wrong, because the leader hasn't really created a clear environment that encourages that, and people, frankly, get a little bit timid about reprisals, etc. So you have to go out of your way to really demonstrate that you mean it. You have to, if people aren't coming to you and telling you things that are on their mind, you have to seek them out. And, you know, perhaps I'd say to you, I'd like to give a little feedback. Is there anything I'm doing that's making your job harder than it needs to be? And if you said to me, no, everything's fine, you're great, I'd say, well, I really appreciate that you like me, but nobody's perfect, and it would really be helpful to me if you could just tell me some way in which I might be able to make your job a little easier. And that will tend to prime the pump. And as long as you don't get defensive about what you then hear, you can start to build a relationship of candor.
That's great. I love that. This is great stuff. Very interesting, different perspective on group dynamics, putting an emphasis on courageous followership as opposed to leadership. And I think it's really an innovative, creative idea. I think I'm going to adopt some of your ideas and some of the thinking and writing that I'm doing. We've got a couple of seconds before the break, and I'll just ask the question, and then we can come back to it after the break. And that is that you've, outside of this area of courageous followership, you've written and thought about revolutionary violence, particularly in West Africa. And I was wondering what that's about and what got you interested in that. But it looks like the music's coming on. We're going to have to take a break. We'll hold that question, Ira, and we'll come back to it. I'm very interested in that work. When we come back, we'll talk more with Ira Chalif. He's the author of The Courageous Follower, Standing Up to and for Our Leaders, and also the co-editor of The Art of Followership. Great followers create great leaders and organizations. His website is CourageousFollower.net, where you can find more out about his book. And we'll be right back after this break. I'm Doug Knoll, and you're listening to
The Doug Knoll Show with your host, lawyer to peacemaker, Doug Knoll.